one of them that we did not really get off the ground as well as we'd hoped to was the idea of a preferred supplier program. Mm. This is the idea that we recognize and somehow reward our best performing suppliers.
A Navy idea, right?
It was originally a Navy idea, and we tried to implement it on a DoD-wide scale, and I think we ran into some problems because of that. Could never come to agreement on how to do it. And I think we took too narrow an approach as to what we would consider and how we would recognize or reward better performance. So we basically handed it back to the Navy to kind of take a leadership role on, similar in a way to the services contracting leadership role the Air Force took originally. So we're going to still move that forward. I think it's still an important thing to do, but we've had to retrench a little bit on that one.
But as of today, it has not. It's basically where we were when we
started.
It's
still a work in progress. I'd say we're further along than we were 2 years ago, but we still have a ways to go.
Okay, that's one. And anything else that you think needs to have a reboot or get eliminated from the program altogether?
One that we're adjusting, I guess I'll use that word, is the guidance we put out on fixed price incentive fee contracting. We held that up as a type of contract that we thought should be used more often. And both Dr. Carter and I were concerned at the time there might be an overreaction of that, and it turns out that our concern had some validity. A lot of people leaped onto that as the, I'll call it the school solution, and started doing fixed price incentive fee contracting because they thought that was the approved type of contract. We always wanted people to think carefully about the right type of contract to use in any given situation, and we have a range of contract types for very good reasons. We did think that fixed price incentive could be used more than it was being used, and we tried to push people in that direction a little bit. The place where it really comes into play, I think, most appropriately and where it wasn't being used enough is in the early lots of production of products, where you can estimate the cost of the product with some degree of certainty, but not quite as much as you would like to have for a firm fixed price contracting, but with enough that a cost-plus vehicle isn't the right vehicle either. So that's the place where we think we should do more of that. And we wanted to narrow that going forward. But we also wanted to make sure people understood that there are a lot of different types of contracts because we have a lot of different types of situations. And they need to understand which type of contract is most appropriate for which situation and then use that. So we're going to back off a little bit from that and try to moderate our guidance a little bit on that one.
As I saw it, the initial guidance was already somewhat moderated because it said fixed price incentive fee is the point of departure. And from there, you know, use your brain and think and figure out which is the most appropriate. Is that still the right way to think about it, or you have a new way of saying this?
It's the point of departure probably for LRIP. In general, fixed price is the point of departure for most of our contracting. But we caveat out with when it's appropriate. We use words like that. But basically, I think it's just an education effort for us to make sure the workforce understands the full range of contract vehicles that are available and when they should be used. And again, this is a reaction to what we saw from the workforce after we put better buying power out the first time.
To the extent that that education piece has been an issue with implementation of better buying power, can you talk a little bit about why that has been? Would you do anything differently with that education piece if you had this to do it over again? Is this a function of a relatively new, relatively green workforce as you try to rebuild it from the cuts that happened in the 90s?
I think it's a function as much as anything of the vast enterprise that is Department of Defense. Mm. You know, we 150,000 odd people employed in acquisition across the department, hundreds of thousands contracts let each year. The workload on our people is pretty high, and if they know there's a certain way that, you know, preferred for them to do things, there's going to be a tendency to default to that unless there's guidance otherwise. One of the biggest problems with any management initiative like Better Buying Power is communicating it effectively. And we did it a lot right after Better Buying Power rolled out to communicate to our management structure, put things into our courses at Defense Acquisition University and other places, and to communicate to the workforce. But I think you can always do better at that. We made a number of visits. Dr. Carter and I made a number of visits to the major buying commands. We enlisted the service acquisition and component acquisition executives in doing the same sort of thing. But I think that our experience reflects that you can't do too much of that. And I think as we go into this next iteration, we'll be working even harder at that.
I want to go back real quickly to the fixed price incentive fee issue. I'm sure you hear the same criticism we do all the time from industry, which is that it's being used inappropriately in situations where that are inappropriate for fixed price contracts. Are you saying that that did happen and that that's a valid criticism, or is industry just never going to like an increase in fixed price contracts?
Well, I think this, there were cases certainly where that did happen. And I saw for the, you know, I see a relatively small number of the contracts that we do coming in for review here mm-hmm. for the major acquisition programs primarily as they go through their milestone reviews. And I did see a movement towards fixed price that I thought was inappropriate in at least two or three cases for some of the major programs, usually for development. I mean, I have a long history in this business, and there was a period in the late 80s when fixed price development was considered to be a solution to a lot of our problems. It didn't work out that way. Fixed price development turned out to be a big problem for us because it was not realistic for or appropriate for a lot of the development contracts we're letting. And once you get into that kind of a contractual arrangement, it's very hard to get out of it without quite a mess. So we went away from it entirely for a while. And 20 years later or so, kind of came back in vogue again. I'm cautious about fixed price development. Most of the time when we're doing development, there is some degree of risk. That's why it's called development. And there isn't, I'd like to say we could be perfect in our estimates of how long things will take and what they'll cost, but the fact of the matter is there are a lot of forces for optimism in our system. And I think we're prudent if we recognize that those are there and try to manage with that in mind rather than try to dictate them away.